Welcome back to The Working Week with me, Ben Askins, the show where we take a problem in working life and business and work out exactly what's going wrong and how we can potentially come up with a solution. And today we're going to be diving into the 9-to-5 working week itself and ask ourselves the question, does it still work in this modern age? And if it doesn't, what are the genuine options that we could implement to replace it? Let's get into it. Check this absolute muppet out here.
Not meant to be working these 40-hour-a-week corporate desk jobs.
Kind of like you're two-timing your employer.
You can't dedicate the time to two bays. That's why it's called cheating.
You see it more in London, actually. Restaurants often not open on a kind of Monday or Tuesday anymore, anyway, because they realize that actually they don't have that many customers on a Monday. Okay. So there's various different ways of opening.
Are we allowed to claim credit if the hospitality sector's struggling so much they're forced to go down to 4 days because the numbers don't work? Is that... do they get credit for that?
So yes, 9-to-5 has come under a lot of scrutiny recently, as this woman perfectly summarizes.
I will literally take every opportunity I can to address the 40-hour work week. Ford established the 8-hour workday in the early 1900s. He established 8 hours work, 8 hours rest, 8 hours sleep, and then start that over again. We went wrong in two places. The first is that Ford worked in manufacturing, which means somebody standing somewhere for 8 hours doing approximately the same task does yield a certain amount of productivity. We rolled over this 8-hour framework into industries where it just does not make sense.
Exactly so. The idea about the 9-to-5 and the questions people are asking is that it actually doesn't really make sense in a modern age. And this has become such a popular opinion now. It's a huge part of jokes, content, making fun of it, and all of that online. And inevitably, as with any popular topic, people weighed in who have absolutely no idea what they're talking about. Check this absolute muppet out here.
Women are not meant to be working these 40-hour-a-week corporate desk jobs. I saw it again today, a really pretty girl walking down the street with her corporate t-shirt, jeans, a backpack, her thermos, looking depressed as all hell walking into her job. It's the saddest thing ever. This girl should not be going to some stupid desk job to sit in a cubicle and report to some asshole boss all day. She should be in a sundress, going to a farmer's market, tanning by the pool, doing yoga, doing Pilates. Stuff like that. I don't even care if I get cancelled.
Honestly, I can't fathom the mind of someone who sort of thinks that and then goes, I'm going to record myself saying that out loud and then look at the clip and going, yeah, that's what the internet needs, is me publicly posting that. But look, there's a reason why so many people are talking about it. And this Forbes article summarizes the core problem perfectly. Working 9-to-5 is an antiquated relic from the past and should be stopped right now. And that is becoming a really popular opinion. And if you kind of look back of how it all started, as that first clip touched upon, it was set up in the US about 100 years ago, and Henry Ford in 1926, who's the sort of founder of the Ford Motor Company, he started a concept that 5-day, 40-hour work week for his assembly line. And the idea is quite simple, right? You've got these big manufacturing plants, you need lots of people on the conveyor belts at the same time, all doing the same job, and so having that sort of tied into set shifts did make a lot of sense. But it is worth pointing out that actually, although Henry Ford is credited with that first sort of premise, and that's absolutely correct, it was only thanks to a lot of labor unions' efforts in the 1880s, 1890s, to kind of get people to adopt that 40-day work week initially, because actually up until then, manufacturers' workers actually worked 100 hours a week and tradespeople worked 102 hours. And I've really looked into this. I really want to know why tradesmen got an extra 2 hours work. Like, I really want to know, and I actually can't find that out. So if anyone does know, please let me know in the comments. But basically, that was a simple idea. So you would work Monday to Friday, and it was based around, so the 8-day movement essentially summarized it perfectly. It says you'd have 8 hours for work, 8 hours for rest, and 8 hours for what you will. Basically having fun, play, life, whatever you want to call it. And that all did make sense. But that actually was a time when people tended to live right next door to their work. So straight away, you're taking the commuter element out. And like we touched upon already, this was very much geared towards a non-digital age. And this more modern day, with all the different jobs and careers that people have, a lot of people find the 9-to-5 a little bit unhelpful in the sense of it doesn't give you enough time to do anything in the morning, and it doesn't really give you much time to do in the evening. And so straight away, you can start saying, right, well, actually, does everyone need to start at 9 and finish at 5? Like, is there not a way we can move things around there? And this would be especially popular. So, for example, in the UK, YouGov, 57% of people in full-time employment would like to start earlier than 9 and finish earlier than 5. So you might say, right, I'm going to do 7 till 3, for example, which is actually something called core hours, which a lot of businesses adopt. So straight away, you can immediately see it's the same amount of hours, but we just sort of move things around a little bit. And this isn't something that just employees are thinking about. Employers are also very much recognizing that perhaps the 9-to-5 is becoming a little bit dated. So Reid Hoffman, who was the co-founder of LinkedIn before selling it to Microsoft in a deal worth £21.4 billion. He was someone who absolutely predicted that due to the rise of the gig economy and other alternative work efforts, basically the 9-to-5 is very likely going to be dead within the next 10 years. But that's not to say the working 9-to-5 doesn't have any benefits. I mean, at the core of it, it is a stable income. You get your salary, and it comes with some very sort of locked-in benefits around things like annual leave, paid time off, and things like that, which a lot of the other sort of forms of work perhaps don't have. And so in the spirit of looking at the pros of 9-to-5 before we get into the cons, this content creator makes a really valid point.
If you want to get rich, you should probably get a 9-to-5 job. I think working a 9-to-5 these days gets a bad rap because everyone is trying desperately to put entrepreneur or founder or CEO on their Instagram bio, when in reality, for most of you, getting a competitive job in corporate America is one of the most reliable and one of the most easy ways to get to a millionaire net worth and to build actual wealth.
He's absolutely right. It's a really valid point. In the regards of like the sort of safety route, I guess you want to call it, working a 9-to-5 job really can be an excellent choice for most people. But I wanted to dive into the alternatives, and I will give you my honest opinion on all of these in regards to which ones I think practically work the best. And the first alternative we're going to look at is the gig economy. Now, the gig economy, for those of you who are not sure what that is, it's basically where you've just got lots of little jobs rather than one big one. So, for example, you've got things like independent contractors, you've got freelancers, you've got delivery drivers, Uber drivers, like that was sort of the classic one back in the day. You got, you know, if you're a freelance copywriter, if you're a freelance designer, like you would be very much part of the gig economy. And the kind of idea is instead of having one big boss, you have almost like two or three clients almost is kind of the phrase, where you have two or three different revenue streams. You might say, right, I'm going to do a day or two a week for them, a day or two for them, et cetera, et cetera. And like there are a lot of pros with that, right? You get a lot more flexibility, you have a lot more independence. The downside is you often don't have this kind of security of that income. You don't have things like notice periods often. A lot of these people are on 0-hour contracts, which I really dislike for a variety of different reasons. And you often don't have that job security. And like the gig economy has changed enormously in the last few years. Like back in the day, the gig economy had a really bad reputation, basically because it was sort of used by a lot of companies, or certainly implied to be used by a lot of companies, to basically get around sort of paying people properly or keeping people on 0-hour contracts, also almost like putting a layer between them and culpability, basically. So you have someone as an independent contractor rather than a direct employee. There are sort of a few things we get around, and I'm not going to go into all those details now, but it led to a lot of headlines such as this, where Amazon workers forced to urinate in plastic bottles because they cannot go to the toilet on shift. And look, this is something Amazon has strenuously denied over the years, of course, but that was very much how the gig economy was kind of viewed initially. Now it's a really different story, actually, if I'm being honest, and it's one of the ones that I think I'm actually most open to. And I think I'm going to make a prediction in the sense of I think it has a very good chance of replacing the 9-to-5. And there's a few different reasons for that, right? I think the rise of social media has made it a lot easier for people to get lots of little jobs rather than one big one. I'm a big fan of the idea because I actually like the idea of having people having multiple streams of income rather than being entirely dependent on one person. Alongside that, the kind of gig economy, the protections and the rights of a lot of these workers are getting a lot better. They're not perfect by any sense of the word, but the government in the UK has clamped down on the rules and regulations recently regarding companies employing 0-contract gigs or freelance workers. And so stuff like that is basically giving people that little bit more security and allowing them to kind of take that on board and help sort of grow it. And the reason why I like it, right, is because the gig economy, or at least the kind of old one, is basically turning into the polygamous worker, is the phrase now, where basically you have lots of little proper jobs rather than one big one. And the reason why I like that, so firstly, it's growing significantly quickly, right? So the gig economy is growing 3 times faster than the traditional workforce, and Gen Z's is leading the charge because they don't trust the old system. And look, the old system has its flaws, as we've already touched upon. But the reason why I quite like it, right, and the reason why I think this works is because no job is perfect. And what I mean by that is if you have one big job, no job is perfect. But if you have lots of little ones, you might be able to kind of scratch the itch of what you want to be doing more of. So if one is more like you're dealing with some really fun clients, but the work isn't creative as you might like, for example, you get some out of that, but not everything. But then you might be able to have another job where you do get to scratch that itch in regards to being a little bit more creative and being sort of able to challenge and push yourself a little bit more. So do you see what I mean? Like if no job is perfect, having lots of little jobs, you might be able to kind of in the aggregate create your best one, right? And then numbers really do back this up, that people are sort of getting on board with this. So in 2024, the so-called gig economy had a market size of $556 billion dollars, and by 2032, that's expected to more than triple to 1.8 thousand billion, which is such a huge number. That's absolutely wild. And so I really do think over the next 10 years, we're going to see a huge increase in people who have lots of little jobs rather than one big one. And look, for me, I think the downside is you need to make sure these little jobs are as protected, not protected in the sense of no one can ever lose it, right? Because if you're a client, you know, clients can find different suppliers and all of that thing. So you don't want to be like where clients have to get locked in forever and can never change supply or anything like that. But it needs to come with some basic stuff around the contracts. And, you know, for example, in the same way a lot of big companies perhaps sometimes take advantage of little companies and steal work and stuff like that, you want to avoid that situation and make sure there are protections there. But obviously, you know, people have to be allowed to like change jobs in the same way. If I have a designer, freelance designer, and I don't like their work or I want to try someone else, I have to be able to sort of move that on as well. So you need to get that balance right. But definitely there are signs that things are sort of progressing there. And I think a lot of people are kind of heading towards that and the numbers seem to back it up. So I think the gig economy, and I'm going to keep calling that, although it's sort of morphing into polygamous employees, so I always murder that word as well. I really do think that the gig economy has a very strong chance of replacing the 9-to-5. Certainly, I think it's got a better chance of replacing than the next one I want to talk about, which is overemployment. Now, overemployment is basically when you have your sort of core 9-to-5 hours, whatever that might be, but then you're doing additional hours on top of that. Now, straight off the bat, if you want to be doing this, I have absolutely no problem. Of course I don't. Like, if you want to work super hard and earn loads of money, amazing, crack on with it. I've been there, I've made those choices, absolutely love that, all for it. I always want people to kind of go for it in that case. But that's not what overemployment is, right? For me, the definition of overemployment is slightly different to the gig economy. The gig economy is you're in charge of your own hours, you have multiple jobs, and you kind of do as much or as little as you want, right? That's the independence. And if you want to work every hour, waking hour of every day, amazing, crack on. But overemployment is where people do two things that's different. One is they feel like they have to take on those extra hours, okay? I'm never a fan of that. I never like the idea of people being forced to work longer than they should simply because they can't make ends meet. And the second thing I don't like is the fact that they keep it secret from their boss or their manager or their company that they're working for directly. So at a basic level, if you're working for 9-to-5 and then you're having like a little secret side job, but you're doing it on the sly and you're being secretive, I don't think that's practical. I know why a lot of people do hide it, but I think in long term, in the sense of, is this something legitimate that's going to work as a society? I don't think that's particularly helpful, hiding it from your employer. And this clip summarizes the problem nicely.
This may be controversial, but what is overemployment and why is it so controversial right now?
It's kind of like you're two-timing your employer. Overemployment is really this concept of working two or more jobs in secret. The rise of remote work set up this climate where people could potentially work multiple jobs, which would allow them to essentially just work 40 hours a week but collect two paychecks. You're cheating.
Yeah.
You got your side bay.
Oh, side bay and main bay. But I think that's where it gets tricky and that's why it's controversial, because you can't dedicate the time to two bays. That's why it's called cheating.
And look, it's obviously a little bit tongue-in-cheek, that clip, but they make the valid point, right? The idea that, I'm a big believer, if someone wants to do additional work on top of that, absolutely great, but you can't be doing two jobs at the same time, right? That's not practical. That's not going to work. And I know people in the comments are going to say, oh, I can do it. But like, again, like, remember what the content is, right? This isn't about me just saying this is what's best for everyone who's doing the work. This is about what best works for everyone. And the idea that you have a situation where lots of people are thinking they're working for one person and secretly working for someone else, like, that's not going to work long term in the future from a sort of practicality perspective. So I don't think overemployment is a valid option. Like I said, I'm very aware it happens quite a lot. I know why people do it. But like I said, I just don't think it's particularly helpful. And like, in the long run, I don't think it's going to help people doing that either. For me, I'd much rather have a set up where people can work as many hours as they want and be quite open about it. But I do understand that people can make that quite tricky. And that brings us on to the next one, which again, like, I'm just giving immediate spoilers, right? But I don't think this next one works either, which is three on, three off. Basically, in a very sort of straightforward sense, you work 3 days on and then you work 3 days off. So this is a shift pattern setup. Basically, a lot of people sort of do this. So things like hospitals, law enforcement, manufacturing. Basically, it's sort of an idea where if you need something to run 24/7, so at a sort of base level, you obviously need people in the hospital all the time, not just 9-to-5. That's kind of where it's a lot set up. And it's often 3 12-hour shifts. You do 3 12-hour shifts, and then you get 3 days off, basically. So you actually get more time off in a sort of day sense, but actually from a sort of practical of how many hours you work and like the intensity of it, I think 12 hours is a lot. I think that's kind of where a lot of people sort of end up. And again, I see the sort of benefits. I understand why people are set up like this and all of that, but I don't think this is going to replace the 9-to-5. I don't think people like it enough, basically. So from an employee sense, in the people doing the work, I don't think people would want to do that. I mean, I could be wrong, right? If you generally think you'd like a 3-day on, 3-day off setup, a lot of people might do that, but I don't think people would, if I'm being honest, is my gut feel. So I don't think that's got much of a chance to do it. Now, this next one I find really interesting, and it's basically the topic of chrono working. Now, this is quite a scientific approach to work, which I'm all for, actually. And basically, the idea behind it is, as you all know, sometimes, and for me, it's 3 o'clock. This is quite a common one. You just get that sort of energy slump. You've had your lunch, you might have had a coffee or you might not, but you've got the rest of the day work and you just feel energy levels drop. Well, that's actually a very common thing for humans. So between 2 to 4, it is a very common experience for basically to have a natural dip in your circadian rhythm. It affects your alertness, it affects your energy levels. And so this is sort of a genuinely sort of proven identified causation. So the immediate thing you start thinking about is, okay, well, how can we ensure that we're not working for those 2 hours when we have that natural dip and we're working for the hours that perhaps we're more productive? And so this is where it gets quite interesting, right? Because not everyone is productive at the same time. Like, there are sort of some standard bits. So, for example, according to the American Clinical Psychologist and Sleep Doctor, which is a great phrase, 55% of people find peak productivity between 10 to 2, for example. So, nice 4-hour window where basically 55% of people are most productive then. 15% are best suited to early morning starts. So, perhaps their time where they get the most work done is between the sort of 7 to 11 mark. And look, I know I'm saying 4 hours here, but you're kind of getting me this as an example. And then 15% actually do a lot better at night. So, might actually do their best work between, say, 5 p.m. and 9 p.m., for example. And then 10% actually have and this is absolutely classic, right, have an erratic rhythm. So sometimes they're better in the morning, sometimes they're better in the afternoon. So those people are straight away going to the top of my high maintenance list. But it does pose a very interesting question, right? Like, if genuine, like, hear me out, right? If there was a system set up where you could identify where you work your best, and then you set up your schedule according to that, where you did your best work, that's beneficial for everyone, right? You probably feel better because you feel high energy, you feel like you're doing the most, and you feel like you're doing your best job. As your boss, as the employer, I'm getting the best out of you because I'm making sure that you're only working on those hours where you feel most productive. So I did find this idea really quite interesting, and I would love to see that implemented. I think the immediate downside to it, so I think the obvious con, right, the pros are pretty self-apparent, okay? You get people working, when they're working their best, they're doing the work, which is awesome for everyone, right? The cons is the obvious one. This is going to be quite hard to manage from a practicality and logistical perspective, and it's also going to be quite hard to manage in regards to, like, how do you actually work out? Like, I don't know what the test is in regards to how easy it is to identify when your natural rhythm is. It might be something you just instinctively know. For example, for me, I'm probably in the evenings. I genuinely do a lot of my best work or find myself most productive in the evenings. So I could be in one of that, but I don't know, right? I don't know. Is there a test? Is there a blood test? I've got absolutely no idea, but I reckon that's quite tricky to implement. So it's one of those sort of ones, and it's quite similar to output management in my mind, in the sense of it's one of those, it's probably quite tricky to set up, but once it is set up, it could be really, really, really effective. So this one, my gut feel is like it's not going to replace the 9-to-5. No, in fact, it's not gut feel. I know for a fact it won't replace the 9-to-5 just because I know how companies tend to approach something that even when it's productive, if there's a huge barrier to getting it set up. Like, this is what you have to understand about companies, right? If you want a new process in, it almost has to be snuck in, like eased in really easily. And then almost by default, overnight, you kind of find yourself all doing that new thing. Very rarely do people go, right, this huge interruption to business straight off the bat is then going to lead greater productivity. Most companies will always say no to that. You kind of want people to ease in almost gradually, sort of sneaking sort of new processes in that way. So I don't think that one's going to be doing it. And then finally, we come to the absolute big hitter, the one that's spoken about the most, the one that causes all the angst, most of the arguments, and inevitably a lot of misinformation as well. That is, of course, the 4-day working week. This is the one that's being pushed the hardest, and the premise is very simple. Instead of a 5-day working week, you have a 4-day working week. But one, this is proving incredibly unpopular with a lot of people, and two, for such a simple premise, it's causing quite a lot of confusion, as these clips all summarise nicely.
Yes, I mean, it's a lovely idea, and its time will come. It will come, maybe 10 years, maybe 20 years, but probably the right time is probably not now. The companies that are signing up to it, you've got to remember, this is going to be quite a biased sample, because the companies that are signing up to it are the ones that it'll work for. You know, a company that know it's not going to work are not going to sign up to that. Right. So already the results are
selecting. I see what you're saying.
And if you're a doctor, a nurse, a bus driver, a train driver, scaffolder, You cannot
do that. A baggage handler.
So there's 2 points to this clip in particular. The first is, I don't buy that argument in the sense of just because a doctor and a nurse or a policeman or a bus driver, or the, well, basically the 24/7, there's some more shift-based occupations, right? Just because they couldn't do it, which actually they could, because I know plenty of doctors who do sort of 4 days a week, for example, that doesn't mean that no one else should have that option, right? I've never bought that as an argument. Oh, unless this one job get, unless every job has every benefit, we should have no benefits. Like, that just doesn't really make sense. And this next clip highlights the second big problem, or certainly the big discussion point around this potential option.
They think you can do 4 days for the same pay as 5 days. That's the real problem, isn't it?
I don't know that I'm shocked. I'm appalled that I think it is taking the taxpayer for granted that it is already impossible to get through to all sorts of services.
So basically the idea is, right, if you shorten your... So the logical thing would be, OK, if you want to work 4 days, I'm absolutely fine, but you get paid 80% of your salary, right? So instead of 5 days, you do 4 days and prorate your salary down. So at a sort of very sort of basic mass level, if you're on 100,000 working 5 days a week, you'd be paid 80,000 to work 4 days a week. But again, that's not quite what the four-day campaign seems to be. It seems to be a lot of people suggesting, actually, you should still get your total salary. But then the question I would ask is, does that mean you increase the hours during those 4 days? Do you see what I mean? Like, I'm very open to having this chat, but there's too much murkiness in regards to the 4 day week to actually understand it all. And so for me, the obvious point was to sit down and ask someone directly these questions. So absolutely delighted that I got a chance to sit down with Joe Rowell, who is the director of the 4 day week Foundation. He basically leads the national campaign for a 4 day, 32 hour working week, and is supporting a lot of organizations in regards to transitioning to a 4 day setup. And I was delighted to ask him a few questions about this.
We define a 4 day working week as a 32 hour working week, or less in some cases, but reducing working hours is the key part there. So reducing from, you know, the standard working week, which historically has been around 40 hours, while maintaining pay for workers. And, you know, for some people that sounds like, you know, really counterintuitive and not possible, but, you know, all the research we found and shown through the hundreds of companies that have moved to 4 day weeks in this model so far have shown that they can maintain productivity, can maintain business performance. So that means pay, you know, pay can stay the same.
And I think that's the big difference, isn't it? Because I've had teams who work for me in the past who are on 1, 2, 3, 4 days a week, but their salary would be adjusting accordingly. So if you worked 4 days a week, you'd get 80% of your salary. But you're essentially saying it's less hours, but the sort of concept is we get more done in those hours, and therefore what productivity is kind of matched. Is that basically the line?
Exactly. And that's partly because, you know, when you're better rested, you know, you're essentially a better worker. You know, you're able to, you're more refreshed, you're more motivated. And that is coming back now in all these kind of studies. And I guess also historically, you know, what we're also saying is that we need to recognise that we've had decades worth now of productivity gains, you know, new technology, which have made us a lot more productive in the workplace. But actually, working hours haven't reduced accordingly. So we think, you know, this is a change which is long overdue.
Okay, and do you have any statistics? Because I think for any change like this, right, the obvious question is what's in it for both sides? And the 4 day is very apparent from employees' perspective. From an employer's perspective, are there any stats, or you mentioned sort of match productivity with companies who have tried this? Are there any numbers that you can share that point towards, you know, you being correct?
Yeah, so there's lots of things. I mean, there's one study I'd always point to, which is Microsoft in Japan moved to a 4 day working week, and they found that productivity went up by 40% when they did that. But from all the pilots that have now been run across the world, and we ran one of the biggest pilots of a 4 day working week in the world so far in the UK, that had 61 companies taking part. At the end of that 6 month trial, the vast majority of business leaders were, you know, convinced that their productivity, business performance had been maintained, in some cases improved for some. But there was also fantastic results for businesses in terms of job recruitment, job retention. There was a 57% reduction in the number of sick days taken, a similar percentage in the kind of boost to job recruitment and job retention. So I
actually totally get the job recruitment sense, in the sense of, right, I could get the same money for 4 days, 5 days. Does that not work against your mission a little bit, in the sense of if every company's offering this, that recruitment appeal kind of is lost?
I think potentially, but I do think that's like 5 years away. I think, you know, I'm really hopeful that we're at the very, very beginning of society starting to shift towards a 4 day working week. And, you know, we have to also recognise that it's been 100 years since we won the kind of 5 day working week and the weekend. You know, we used to all work 6 days a week, and it's, mm-hmm. What is that? May next year, May 2026, will be 100 years since we won the weekend. And so we think, you know, absolutely that it's a long time coming that this moves to a 4 day working week. But yeah, at that point, you're right. Maybe then we need to look at a 3 day week, you know, because at the end of the day, what the 4 day week opens a discussion around, well, It's kind of arbitrary, the number of hours you work, really. It shouldn't be about just hours worked for the sake of it. Actually, the conversation should be about, well, what are you actually getting done in that time, and how much time does it take? Because there's so much presenteeism across the British economy and British workplaces.
100% I agree with that. I guess the obvious counter to that, again, would be if you have, say, you have an output for 4 days, an output for 5 days, the output for 5 days is more. And by the way, can I read my... I really put my sort of business owner hat on for this conversation because I find it really interesting. Yeah. And I've got two main concerns, which I'm going to ask you and just see what you think, basically. So I totally accept the premise, by the way, that a motivated team on 4 days a week would outperform an unmotivated team 5 days a week. Like, I genuinely do. And I totally understand how if you have an unmotivated team on 5 days, taking them down to 4 days and in return say, but look, this is the output and this is what I expect from you and all that sort of stuff. I totally see how that can work. But if you have a motivated team for 5 days, how do I remain competitive with the motivated team from 4 days? You see what I mean? There has to be a drop in productivity at that point, right?
Potentially. I mean, it really depends on the role. But, you know, there's loads of studies that have shown that actually most people are only productive for like 15 hours a week. I mean, that's 15 hours is the actual time when people are really productive. They really get on with it. They really get stuff done. Mm. And a lot of the other time is waste, particularly in this day and age with the kind of, you know, smartphones, social media, we do get distracted so easily. And what we've seen with companies that have moved to fully, they're a lot more focused. Some of that distraction time is just automatically cut out. You know, it's almost like you do become more refreshed and more productive overnight in a way, you know. And I see that even in my job. You know, it's like I start work on a Monday. I know I'm going to finish at Thursday, 5 p.m. And so I look at my to-do list. I'm like, well, I'm going to make sure I do everything I can to finish by that 5 p.m. on a Thursday rather than Friday, 5 p.m. And you do just become more focused and more efficient. There's almost a kind of natural efficiency which kind of arises overnight.
Okay. I think I accept that. I think it is funny how if you set someone a task and say it's got to be done by Wednesday and you set someone a task and you say it's got to be done by Thursday, it's amazing how they then stick to those timelines, right? And it's not that they're not working hard or anything like that. It's just almost like a sort of self-fulfilling prophecy in that sense. Mm. I guess my second one is, so take my first business, which is the digital agency, right? We obviously have clients who are 5 days a week. Yeah. How, as someone who has clients who are on 5 days a week, me having a 4 day week, especially when you do have instant problems in this digital age, I'd say they're actually more prevalent because you've got things like campaigns that, you know, whatever it might be. I think you have more immediate problems in a technology age that perhaps you didn't have in a more sort of manufacturing age. How do you counter that? How as a business? So for example, I might lose customers because I'm not available one day. Like what's your response to companies to that? Because I'm all for trying it, but if my clients aren't on a 4 day, how do I even remotely approach that?
So in the long run, I think what we want to see is like Friday basically becomes part of the weekend, you know, that it kind of gets eaten into the weekend and that, you know, and everyone starts to kind of live that sort of lifestyle, 3 day weekend for everyone. I accept we're not there yet. We're not anywhere near there yet. And so in the meantime, what we've seen with the kind of hundreds of companies that have moved to 4 day weeks in the UK is they're doing different shift and rota patterns. So it's quite common for a 4 day week company where you might have, for example, half the staff working Monday to Thursday, half the staff working Tuesday to Friday, or you might have a kind of like cover system in where actually on a Friday you have a bit of a rota where there's one or two people that are there as a kind of backup, you know, if something really, really important comes up on a Friday that needs to be dealt with and there's someone is there to do it. But usually that doesn't happen. And I think also...
And just to clarify, so if you said you have people on call, would they be compensated for being on call?
Yeah, exactly. They'd be on a rota, so that would be one of their working days.
So immediate, again, I've got my business owner hat on, immediately saying, right, this has cost me more money because I'm essentially paying everyone a full-time salary and then I'm having to pay people on call to kind of cover the stuff that... Do you see what I mean? Like, that's an immediate
cover. Yeah, or not necessarily, though, because that might just be one of their 4 days. I mean, you know, it's different each company. Each company would...
Okay,
That might actually be one of their days, but it also, it might not be. Maybe you have a call system where they literally just log into the email twice a day. They log in at, say, like midday, and they log in at the kind of 3, 4 p.m. just to check if anything's really urgent to come up. So maybe you don't pay them for that. I've seen that implemented in that way as well, where it is just like they might log in. And if they happen to need to do something really urgently, then maybe you compensate them for that. There's different ways of implementing it. You know, it can be flexible.
So the long-term goal is, say, let's just pick Friday because that's probably everyone's favourite. We say everyone gets Friday off, right? But in the interim, you're sort of recommending that people stay open for business for 5 days, but then adjust team.
Yeah, if they need to, you know. We recognise that one of the major blockers to 4 day week at the moment is that the 9 to 5 day working week is still so prevalent. So with people, you know, companies that are moving to a 4 day week are moving to that in a world which is still dominated by the 5 day week. So that will mean people that have clients that need say, servicing on a Friday, they can't just... Over time, they can change those patterns. And actually, one of the things that 40-week companies have noticed is that there is this culture we've created, and it's quite recent, where we're sort of always on and always expected to reply to things immediately. And actually, you start to see on a 40-week, often that isn't actually necessary. Often most things can wait till a Monday morning. There is that culture change which happens.
And I guess, I mean, my final question is, what do you offer the people who can't go down 4 days a week? So, you know, the hospitals, the police, the, you know, the sort of more sort of 24/7 types of services. Because my prediction would be, if we said, right, globally, say as a country we got to the point where we said, right, we're officially going down to 4 day week, I can promise you they would be in front of their sort of boss or superiors within the day, probably fairly, right, saying, I want a 20% pay rise because I'm officially taking... Because either, right, either we have to give them... Either they officially have to stay working 5 days, or I think your argument might be, right, we'll drop them down to 4 weeks, but you have to recruit a lot more and it becomes a lot more expensive anyway. So there is a cost to this, isn't there?
Potentially in some sectors. I mean, it's interesting because you take the NHS, for example, and that's a sector where the huge issue there is just staff quitting and leaving really, really early. And if you look at all the survey data, the number one reason they're leaving after retirement is work-life balance, lack of work-life balance. So something like a four-day working week in the NHS. And let's remember, most NHS staff are actually already do a three-day week. They do three 12-hour shifts. So there's already different experimentation going on.
Yeah, so of course, there might... My wife's actually a doctor and she works 4 days a week. So actually, I know that one. But her salary gets adjusted, right? That would be my point. So you're sort of saying, so the NHS, probably quite a good example, right? Most doctors are dropped out, a lot do 3-4 days. So I agree, the retention rates appalling. Like, we're having huge issues, right? Doctors leaving and nurses left, right, and centre, and we can't recruit enough. The problem we have, right, is if we adjusted that salary down to 80%, which is what they do if they work 4 days a week, if we say, right, keep it 100%, but you still get dropped down 4 days a week, every doctor who's on 5 days a week would drop down immediately, and suddenly we have even bigger shortages in the NHS because we don't have enough staff to fill. So we'd then have to go out and recruit, and that would start costing more money. And do you see what I mean? There are genuine challenges from there, aren't there?
Yeah, and clearly the NHS can't afford that overnight now for everyone. But what we've said in some sectors is that, look, this is the direction of travel. We think, regardless of whether people like it or not, this is where we're headed for. You know, this we're pointing, everything is pointing towards a future of a shorter working week. And for some industries, that they might be able to just do that overnight, for others not. So what we've said to some other sectors is that, look, we want to get to a 4 day week within 10 years time. What path can you set out over that 10 years? That might be, in some cases, that just reducing by half an hour or an hour a week in this year, and you do it more gradually. And you know, that's the thing, that there's different ways of implementing it, and we've seen lots of different ways of implementing it work in different companies and lots of different settings. And I've been really, really encouraged by the fact that you look at our kind of 250 companies that are accredited for us. It's not just kind of marketing, desk-based, collar, white-collar workers. You know, it's a real mix of different sectors, from hospitality, retail, manufacturing, you know, corporate finance, really different sectors that have been able to make it work.
Can I just jump in? Explain hospitality to me, because obviously they're open most, well, nearly all the time, especially for your hotel. So you mean people are down to 4 days a week or whatever, but they're paid 100% of their salary, basically?
That has happened, yeah, in quite a few restaurants and hotels. Some of those restaurants have actually, you'll see it more in London, actually. Restaurants often not open on a kind of Monday or Tuesday anymore, anyway, because they realise that actually they don't have that many customers on a Monday. Okay. So there's various different ways of implementing.
Are we allowed to claim credit if the hospitality sector is struggling so much they're forced to go down to 4 days because the numbers don't work? Is that... Do they get credit for that?
Well, as long as they're maintaining their profits. I mean, that's the thing. For the 61 companies that took part in that 4 day week pilot in 2022, and there was a couple of retail companies, vast majority of them saw their profits increased, and increased by kind of 35% going back to the year before. Companies that have moved to a 4 day week so far, the kind of early adopters, are really reaping the rewards in terms of better profits, better staff well-being, more staff cohesion. I think they're, you know, other companies in those sectors should be looking behind them, saying, actually, there's a danger here of getting left behind, because if a company in the same sector is offering the exact same conditions but on a 4 day working week, the same pay, then you know, you're going to have to keep up with that.
No, that's really interesting. And you mentioned Japan. Are there any other countries that are sort of taking this on as well? Any other countries you're seeing progress being made here?
The Spanish government just announced that they're reducing the standard working week from 40 hours to 37.5. So, again, it's not the full reduction to 32 hours, but it shows the direction of travel. In Iceland, they've implemented a shorter working week across the economy for nearly 90% of their workers. That was quite a famous study and trial that took place there. And various other countries experimenting. The Scottish government have been trialling it in the public sector, and the results from that pilot are out at the end of this month. Spain, Portugal, lots of different countries.
No, really interesting. And my final question is, would you accept any sort of change? So at a sort of very basic level, right? What if you had the same amount of hours but reduced it to 4 days? You said, look, everyone has to work an extra couple of hours on that day, for example. Like, I think a lot of people might be quite up for something like that. I think both employees and employers.
Definitely. I mean, we know they're already happening. So things like compressed hours, a 9-day fortnight, you know, all of these initiatives, we would say, are kind of the first step on the road to a kind of true 4-day working week. But we have to also, I think, be aware that in some cases, you know, compressing a full-time working week into 4 days
probably
can actually exacerbate some of the problems that a 4-day week is trying to fix around burnout and overwork. Because, you know, we're working 10-hour days, for example, is not going to suit lots of people.
Mm-hmm. No, it's really interesting. Well, Joe, I really appreciate you taking time to speak to me. Best of luck with the campaign. I found that chat really interesting, and I'm really open to being convinced by the 4-day week, but I do have a couple of main concerns, which I've touched upon with my chat with Joe. The first is the client's bit, right? So if I've got a business, most businesses need external people buying their services, goods, whatever it might be. And if you're not available one of the days a week, you're just not very competitive compared to your other competitors at a sort of basic level. So like I said, a really good example is my first business, Verve, right? We're a digital agency. There are a lot of digital agencies out there. If a client comes to us and we say to them, oh, look, we're not available on a Friday, like they're not really going to pick with us. That's a really tough one. And the main problem I have with that is I know there'll be hacks to get around it. And that's my concern, because it'll be clients still just going, oh, gee. And basically you'll end up with a few people in the business basically working 5 days a week because they can't quite sort of say no because it's so important, because they sort of bought into the company and all that sort of stuff. So I do have concerns about that. Like, to actually make this work, you would need a government to come in and say, right, we are officially moving to a 4-day week. But that doesn't even that doesn't really solve the problem, because you need it. A lot of people have international clients, and again, they need to appeal to international markets. So, you know, again, like in my company, we had clients abroad in sort of all over the place, in Dubai and Europe and America and all of that. Like, they're not going to work with a company that only is open 4 days. So that's my big concern about the 4-day week. Like, if I actually would accept, like, probably would we be a happier society if we did it? Probably, like, we probably would. But in regards to, like, how we get to that point, I do think, and bear in mind, the sort of topic of this discussion was what could replace the 9-to-5. I do think that's kind of a really big barrier to that one. The other one is, like, in regards to the gains, like I also, like I said, I totally accept that if you have an unmotivated team, I totally accept that a motivated team would outperform that over 4 days. Like I sort of said, I really do believe that. But there are motivated teams who are working 5 days a week, right? Who are incentivized, who do have a share of the pie, who do really want to kind of commit to it and all of that sort of stuff. So again, like I found really interesting, by the way, is where you said everyone just found ways to make themselves more efficient. Like, that is totally fair enough, right? There are companies are so inefficient in so many ways, and we can all think of any number of reasons. Even me, with like my relatively small business, like even I could just immediately think of stuff we can make them more efficient where we waste time. So I do actually accept that as well, but I don't think you can say this is just not going to be an output drop there at all. So it's a really interesting one, but I just think there's a couple of real barriers. And do you remember what I said during the early on in this piece, where I said, like, if you want a big change done, you need to kind of sneak it in rather than just have that big announcement and have pain up front. Like, companies just don't buy that, don't go in for that. They prefer gradual sort of progress. And so if I'm kind of summarizing what I think most likely is going to replace the 9-to-5, I do think it's going to be the gig economy. Like I said, the reason being is it's kind of already happening. I think, like I said, there's barriers to the 4-day week. I don't like overworking. Chrono working, I think, is really interesting, but again, you've got that sort of big barrier. So I do think the gig economy is literally already kind of happening. A lot of people have multiple jobs. Basically, I think the gig economy has to be employee first. And what I mean by that is they have to want to do it because it works for them, rather than being forced to do it because companies want to add layers of protection like that. It's totally not okay. But I do think gig economy gives a lot of people the freedom that they want, give them a lot of options. And I do think it makes it quite a meritocracy as well, which I'm all for, which a lot of the economy isn't set up to do that, which I'm actually a big fan of meritocracy, because I think a lot of things benefit in that sense. So I do, if I'm going to make a prediction, and I'm very dubious about making predictions on the internet because you just get clipped a year later and everyone shows what a muppet you are, I do think gig economy is going to to be the one that does replace the 9-to-5. I think it probably will. I think the majority, long-term, 5-10 years, I wouldn't be shocked to see it was bigger than, say, the more people are doing the gig economy than working 9-to-5. Four-day week, I think we probably will get there eventually, maybe. I think, but God, I think it's going to be a really sort of long... I think the world... Okay, I'll put it this way, right? For the four-day week to work, there needs to be a lot more international happiness with, and countries need to be getting on a lot better than they currently are for it to work. And I think until we get to that point, I think the four-day week is going to be a struggle, as much as I actually think overall for society it probably will have a net benefit. But look, that's the show. As ever, please do give this a like and subscribe. It really makes a huge difference if you liked it. Please do put any comments. If you want topics for us to cover or look into, please do let me know. We really do read these. A lot of our topics have come from this already, so please do check it out. Otherwise, I will see you all next week. Thanks so very much.